Good afternoon and welcome to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy, and Hometown is back after a little break in July, and we're excited to be back. Our topic today is education, and we have a wonderful guest for you today. It's Dr. Dina Paramo, the superintendent of the Mat-Su School District. Welcome, Dina.
Thank you.
And I just wanted to let our Anchorage listeners know that the superintendent for the Anchorage School District will also be on this program in about around August 22nd with Charles Walfro, so you can listen for that. And in 2 weeks, I just want to invite you to think about sharing your tattoo stories with us, because we're going to have a show on tattoos, Alaskans and their tattoos. So if you want to send us a shot to hometown@alaskapublic.org, we can start to see what Alaskans are doing with their tattoos. At any rate, I hope you'll join us and ask questions to Dina about education, whether you are a parent of the Mat-Su, or you're a student in that school district, or maybe a graduate. If you've got questions for Dina, we'd love for you to give us a call. In Anchorage, you can call 550-8433, or outside of Anchorage, it's 1-888-353-5752, and we can take emails at hometown@alaskapublic.org. A reminder that this program airs again at 7. It's a recording, so now's the time to call and ask your questions. And our interview today will be archived on the Alaska Public website, so if you miss it or want to hear it again, you can always come on to our website at alaskapublic.org and hear it again. And I'd also direct you there to just an introduction to today's show and some links that Dina and I'll probably talk a little bit about. So if you want to know more about what we're talking about, the school report card to parents, for example, we've got links on Hometown Alaska at alaskapublic.org to follow up on that. So welcome, Dina. Thank you for coming down on this rainy day. I thought we'd put your superintendentship into some context, because you're just 1 year in, although 20 years or so at that district. I know you began as a middle school teacher, and I think to myself, if you can teach middle school, you can survive anything, right? But you rose through, had different jobs, were I think an assistant superintendent of instruction for several years.
Yes.
But your rise to the superintendentship was a sad circumstance. The district lost a superintendent that had only been there a year. You were working closely with him. It's Stephen
Burnley, Dr. Stephen Burnley.
Yes. So I just thought that was a difficult way to become the superintendent of the Mat-Su School
Absolutely.
District.
Absolutely.
What was that like?
I mean, obviously stressful, and it was difficult. I mean, there's no other way to say it. But I had been in the district and pretty competent in the instructional side of the house, and I was basically offered the position when he had passed away, assisted with his funeral arrangements and everything that goes along with that in the yeah. transition. Interestingly enough, he had had a surgery and then died in the afterwards, aftercare. And he had turned the district over to me in the meantime. So he had signed everything over at that time, knowing that he would be out for a few weeks. So as far as the legal issues and things like that, they were really taken care of. He was a smart man. He knew and was always prepared. But it was difficult, but it was something that couldn't be done. You know, he was well liked and came on really strong and really wanted to add value to the district.
Mm-hmm.
And we did carry some of those initiatives through and are excited to do so. But I hit the ground running, and I initially was just on a very brief contract. It was, you know,
interim sort of thing
with a 30 days notice. If you're done, you're done. And since then, and after a year, the board voted, 7-0 to extend a contract for a longer length of time. And so I'll be a Mat-Su. But it isn't a career ladder that is certainly anything you'd want to have happen.
Mm-hmm.
But we moved through together as a team, from the school board to the administrators, principals, everybody, and the people of Mat-Su really helped us move on.
Right. So it's, I did read that he was a very organized, very far thinking. I think he was a fellow at the University of Michigan. He was a national figure, really, in education. So were there things that you just had to see through, or did you change course with things, basically following Dr. Brunley?
Well, he was a great idea man, and my position was the doer.
Ah.
And so doing is very easy for me. So we had, when he had asked me to look at some items or some initiatives, I was the one who was tasked with getting the instructional side of the house done. And so as far as that note, it was okay to do because we really partnered on a lot of those initiatives. So I had, insight and involvement, but he certainly was the spark.
Yeah,
for a lot of those
yeah.
initiatives.
Must have been an interesting opportunity to work with somebody like that, even if it lasted only a year. I just, in case people have just joined us, I just want to remind them that we're talking with Dr. Dina Paramo. She's the superintendent of the Matanuska Susitna Borough School District. It's a long name. I'm hoping that we'll hear from people who maybe went to school in the district or are going to school in that district, maybe have questions for the superintendent. Right now, we're all getting sort of back-to-school fever. Maybe we're thinking mostly about shopping for back-to-school clothes. But really, this is a really unique opportunity to go ahead and ask Dina questions if you've got them. We're going to work our way through some of her initiatives for the year, but right now we're going to go to a pretty hot topic that's taken a big shift here in Alaska. It is the No Child Left Behind. The state of Alaska, just in July, was granted a waiver. And so I was going to ask an expert, Dina, if she could kind of put that waiver in context for us, and then maybe tell us what does it mean for her school district and her students?
Sure. Well, the waiver is really you're waiving the percentage of students. If you know, the initial law was that 100% of your students would be proficient by 2014, and increasing by 5% every year now until 2014 is a task. And so what that waiver was allowed us to place the AMOs, or they are annual measurable objectives, keep those steady so that we can reach them, that they're truly attainable goals rather than way out there.
It sort of puts that 2014 deadline.
Correct. Well, there's still a deadline, but you're allowed to show progress on that. It's not an all or nothing type of a task, I guess. So you're moving forward, and the waiver allows for a different way to look at your assessments. Currently, it's very hard to make AYP in some schools, especially larger schools. If you miss, there's 32 categories for which you're assessed, and if you miss just one tiny category, then you are not, you don't meet AYP, which is ridiculous, because some of our highest performing schools may miss one category, and to say that that is not a successful school, I think is inappropriate.
Pretty black and white approach to... Okay, so I don't want to
Oh, sure. So the waiver is looking at a new way to do the metrics that fall into saying whether a school is successful or not. And the state's actually going to rate them by a 1-star, 2-star, all the way up to 5 stars, 5 stars being the best.
So the criteria will be delivered by the state?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. And the state is the one who's actually getting the waiver, and it's provisional, so it'll be probably finalized in November, but they apply, and they have to meet rigor in the federal government to be allowed to do this.
So they just can't have some really easy...
No.
It's going to have to pass muster with the federal government.
Correct. And it's the change in the metrics really allows it to not be an all or nothing. If I had to describe it, it really allows you to show growth while still looking at those small demographic areas. And and we break out our scores into not only school as a whole, but every nationality, students with special needs,
right.
Low socioeconomic kids,
right.
Limited English proficiency kids, and then, like I said, all the ethnic groups. So if you have one area for which you're struggling or just targeting, your school could be labeled a failure when all other categories, all 9 other categories are shining. And so
yeah.
This just allows more transparency to the public to see where those spots are, where a school might be working
yeah.
on.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to ask you to tell us a little bit about how it will affect Matsu, but on the grand scheme, No Child Left Behind, I mean, the harsh view of it is it almost looks like it was designed to cripple schools, because, I mean, if the standard is so high that every single student has to meet it, and it just disregards the diversity of your student population, the different needs, I mean, what do you think of it as an educator who, knows schools have problems, knows improvements, change is all necessary, but a standard that's impossible to meet. It's, it's tough.
Well, I'm not an NCLB hater, if you will. I do believe that looking at every child is appropriate, because we should provide a solid education where a child can move on and do something productive with his or her life. But it's in the consequences, which is hard to understand. And there are some folks that say the standards are too low, the standards are too high. Well, given any child, sometimes they are too low. It is a minimal standard. It is minimally what we want a child to learn. So there's a lot more to add value after that test is passed. I mean, they shouldn't be just, oh, I'm done high school. That's a fallacy. But it's minimal competencies in reading, writing, and math. But it's moving kids through. We aren't all born the same. And so when kids enter kindergarten, some are really reading at, you would say, as a 7 or 8 year old level, and some are coming in at skills at a 3 year old. And so initially when kids come to us, we need to work hard to move double time for the kids that need to make up learning, if you will. But also, especially in Matsu, we say we need to guarantee, even for those precocious kids that are very, very smart, that they still get a year. We do not want to regress to the mean. Getting everybody the same is not where we want to go. We want to guarantee a year for a year for kids, at least, whether you are the top quartile or the top 10%, or maybe more than a year if you're in the lowest quartile, so that kids can graduate and move to where, you know, some are going to be rocket scientists, and some, you know, want to work right here in Alaska, and, you know, for either construction or anywhere else. And what we let our kids know is that true that your body might give out. So be sure you get your education, because then you can be a manager as well. We let them know that there's so many opportunities that continue education, and it'll open doors for you.
Well, tell us what it's going to mean for the Matsu District, the fact that you're going to get this waiver. What will it change for students? What will it change for teachers?
Well, interestingly enough, I just looked at some of our data, and those data demonstrate that we have, I believe, 6 schools, some of high schools, that only missed in one category. So it could be limited English proficient students, which are second language. We have a lot of students from the Ukraine, that they did not score the 85% needed, whereas everyone else did. And so Wasilla High is one of those schools. And I know at one time it was, you know, received bad press because someone used that for some extant data that they just pulled out to make a point. But here's Wasilla High that almost all of their kids are performing at the level that they need to, and one score. So we're hoping that adjusting the metrics to demonstrate that this one group, yes, we need to move forward, but as a whole, more children are succeeding. So it'll just be more transparent to parents, so they don't see it as that might be a bad school or that's a good school. So they can really see what's going on, and who are the kids in the school and how are they achieving.
So it's a fuller picture of what's going on. That's the classic thing. The bad headline is all anybody pays attention to, and they don't actually notice that there's a lot of success around it. Will this mean that, for example, those students at Wasilla High, that those Ukraine students will be getting more attention because you're going to try to boost that?
And that is actually part of the law. When you don't make a certain area, your funding is 20% of your funding is really targeted to students who don't make it, which is a good thing. You know, you're putting your money where your mouth is and really going after it. But that is part of the NCLB. It's the consequence of holding your money back to work with one group or another, things like that. But in your improvement plans, that's what you focus on, is getting the group that isn't performing up to a standard. But as I said before, in Matsu, it's not just about making everybody pass that test, because that, believe it, that is our floor. That's not our ceiling.
Yeah.
And so we really want all kids to learn.
You know, I read one criticism. I think this was in the Christian Science Monitor, and it was one superintendent of a school somewhere, because a lot of states are doing this. I think 26 states now have applied for the waivers and are in the process of getting them. But she was sort of saying, be careful. You could get into a situation of what is it, robbing Peter to pay Paul, taking care of this problem, but really not. And I'm not quite sure exactly what she means, but does it mean resources would be applied early that you might need later? I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, and you know, it's something that you don't want to take this assessment and start gaming it and say, and you know, we could look good in the papers if we did this, this, and this. I just come from a standpoint of all kids will learn in our district. Mm-hmm. If you are the most advanced student, you deserve a year, and if you're behind, you're going to get what you need as well. And so we just use systems of support rather than just small pet projects, if you will, to really help kids.
Right, right. Okay. Well, just let our listeners know we're talking with Dr. Dina Paramo. She's the superintendent of the Matanuska School District. We'd be delighted to take some calls from you. Our number is 550-8433 or 1-888-353-5752, or you can send us an email to hometown@alaskapublic.org. So that's the big boogeyman, the No Child Left Behind, and you're living with it. As an educator, is it tough to have the federal government looking over your shoulder like that, or do you just sort of, like you said, it's taxpayer money? I was always wondering whether No Child Left Behind was also a way to shrink public schools and let the voucher system take over so people could spend their money that way. I mean, do you see it that way?
I believe that there was a time, and we need to look at it, that we need to ensure success for kids. Uh-huh. And if we were producing an organization that only targeted some kids who were better learners, say, then yeah, we needed to change that, because through public education is public money. And we know that everything after high school, economic-wise, health and social services-wise, that an education does impact that. There's a lot of relationship or correlation, if you will, between education, including high school, college, and you can go on, with healthcare, with job opportunities, with taking care of children.
Sure.
You know, there's so many different issues.
Sort of a
that,
core.
Yeah. So
fundamental
education is fundamental.
Yeah.
And so to move forward with that, you know, that if NCLB had to kick us in the pants and get us to make sure we educate all kids, that's fine. But that's not our only indicator of a successful school. Matt Sue last year, I was questioned by our board president, Mr. Mike Dunleavy, that said, you know, we showed him our scores on NCLB and things. And he said, but what do those scores mean after kids leave? And so we commissioned, got some grants, partnered with, believe it or not, the Career and Technical Education, the state of Alaska, Department of Labor, and commissioned a study to study kids 5 years out of high school, 3 years out, and 1 year out, to say, what are they doing? And we did, it was intensive. It was an outside agency doing this. They called every graduate, and we were happy with our results. So our kids are moving on, and 74% of Matsu kids in each of those 3 years, so it ranged between 74 and 76, 1 year out, 3 years out, and 5 years out, 74% were engaged in education after high school, whether that be career technical certificates, on-the-job training, but 60% of that 74 were in university or college,
mm-hmm.
2 to 4 year. And so we're happy about that. And they're choosing and understanding that an education is important.
Oh, that's good. It's another metric, as you say. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of different ways to slice this onion and
Absolutely.
See it. We've got a caller, and I want to invite Martha onto Hometown Alaska. Hi, Martha.
Hello. Good afternoon. It's nice to hear how things are going in the Matsu, and I welcome the guests you have. And I wanted to say that I was born here in Anchorage, and I was raised here, and I was educated K through 12 in the local school system, beginning with the kindergarten, which was the end of my kindergarten year was the year we had the earthquake, which led to displacement. I grew up in Anchorage in the 1670s. I'm 54 now, where there was segregation and housing in lots of areas before the Civil Rights Act, and even after that, where it was even segregated, I think, in the educational system through housing zoning. And
so, Martha,
what's
your question?
You know, I'm a parent, and I'm both been a student and then a parent, and then an observer of the local school system and also of the national politics. Mm-hmm. And I actually like No Child Left Behind.
Mm-hmm.
I think it makes school districts accountable for every child, including especially minority children. And it costs districts to give and educators to give children a fair chance. It gives them an even playing field, gives them the resources they need, and it forces accountability in school districts. So I'm glad you've singled out one population from a European community where I think they've had conflict. You have other communities where they have children of war who are here in the school district, and I welcome them to the community, and I know that you have challenges in educating them, but look at the Native community where they have the charter school. If you look at the test results, which is what you have to look at with No Child Left Behind, they've gotten outstanding results educating Native children. Mm-hmm. What's the difference between the Native children in that charter school that serves only through elementary school, that population, and other Native children in the district who generally score below average?
So Martha,
that's
it sounds like you're an appreciator of No Child Left Behind. You feel like it's made educators more accountable.
I think it's okay. I'll say the final thing. I think it's the only thing, one of the few things that George W. Bush pushed through as president that I can openly support.
Okay, thanks,
thank
Martha.
You. All right. The question again is using the Native children as an example. Do you have a charter school where they're getting outstanding results, and then you're having the general population getting under-tested? You can argue about parental involvement and other things, but I think it's also the approach that you have to the children. So that's why I appreciate No Child Left Behind, and thank you for the topic.
Thanks, Martha.
I would like to comment on that, and the caller mentioned the approach to the children and of how they learn, and that's absolutely spot on, because we found, and I had mentioned earlier, my doctorate degree was in learning assessment systems performance, so I'm a little bit of a data nerd. I love that. So what we did in Matsu is we're looking at our different demographics, and not necessarily just the SBA, standards-based assessment, but in, you know, are kids of all different nationalities equally represented in, or ethnic groups, equally represented in our sports teams? Are they, and we found that they are, and especially Alaska Natives, mm-hmm. and they do well. We're looking at, we have a special career in technical high school. When kids exit, they actually have a third-party certificate, whether that be for nursing, welding, Cisco. Mm-hmm. It's a rigorous school, but it is a comprehensive a high school, if you will, where they can go 9 through 12, but then leave with the certificate. They learn both the trade and the professional route, and so that they have opportunities for both. Mm-hmm. But we noticed that our Alaska Native students were not enrolling in there. We have about 12 to 13% Alaska Native students in Matsu, but only 4% were at the school. So we changed what we did in our recruitment efforts at all of our middle schools. And we asked some Alaska Native kids who were successful at Career Tech High School and said, what was it that made you go here? And it was really that personal touch from someone else who had gone that said, oh, it's great. But when we had counselors just in a large group talking about all the opportunities, they said that wasn't what made them choose it. And so we changed the way that we recruit to make it a personal conversation with Alaska Native children and other children that we see that might not speak up in a group sometimes, or mm-hmm. or their learning may be different, so that we can get the kids represented as they are represented in the whole demographic.
Have you seen a change?
This is our first year, because we found that out last year, and we hope so. We have the kids enrolled, and really it's that extra effort to say, you know, what is it this kind of, if you will, Anglo system that we use that isn't resonating? And the kids told us, and they love their new school, and they, you know, they get along, so it wasn't there wasn't a problem at the school. It was just the manner in which the adults approached the children. So we changed that.
In describing the options that were available mm-hmm. for them. That's interesting. So it sounds like a constant process of evaluation and adjustment, right?
True. And you just look at the data, and it doesn't lie, but you don't put you know, it's value neutral. I'm not going to say it's good or bad. It just is what it is. And if you want it to improve, you have to change your behavior to improve it.
Right. And it's sort of forensic, figuring out, well, what piece of this can we adjust then that might give us a different result? So mm-hmm. that's part of what a superintendent does.
Right? Yes, yes.
when I knew we were going to have this program, I wanted to just briefly compare your district with the Anchorage School District, which is where this radio program is originating from, but we do serve listeners out in the Matsu. But, you know, I looked on the websites and I just saw your district has 45 schools. It has 17,000 students.
Correct.
The district here has 50,000 students and I think about 88 schools, something like that. And another thing I noted on their website is they often you hear about the number of languages spoken in the Anchorage School District, 90 or something like that. Tell me some comparative things from your district that might let us see it in perspective to what we maybe hear more about down in Anchorage.
Sure. We are approximately about the third the size of in student population of Anchorage. And the Matsu itself is about 82,000 people. Our geographic area is larger. So we, just so you know, we bus kids more. Our kids are more miles on the bus than kids in Anchorage. So Anchorage tends to have larger schools. Their population's denser, so their schools are in their neighborhoods. Anchorage has high schools, generally larger high schools. Matsu, our largest, is about 1,300, and I believe some of Anchorage's high schools go upwards of 2,000. But I want to say that we sure do compete with those kids in those larger high schools.
Okay.
But Anchorage, a lot of the choices are the same. Anchorage has charter schools and special mission and optional schools. And Matsu has those options as well. We have six charter schools and that serve a multitude from homeschool to Waldorf-inspired education, to a college prep, core knowledge, Spanish immersion. So we have some of those choices. We have special mission schools. I mentioned one, Career Technical High School, similar to the King Career Center here.
Correct.
We have STEM initiative schools, where students can really focus on science, technology, engineering, and mathematics.
Does that start in the elementary?
Or? Elementary, and it's an aligned all the way through.
Okay.
And that is, basically, that's, you know, some people look at it as like, oh, that's a curriculum. But it's really just taking those constructs of science, technology, engineering, and math and putting that lens into learning for kids and making it exciting.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been successful. We did receive from our legislative session, some funds to really boost that in Matsu, and we're really proud of that. Those types of programs that we're able to do with STEM. But they're very similar and in some ways and different. Our elementary schools are about 400 to 450, and I believe some of Anchorage's they're just larger.
Yeah.
And again, the population is more dense.
The density in Anchorage mm-hmm. would explain a lot of that. I'd love to go to the phones. We've got some callers calling in. I'd like to welcome Kim from Palmer to Hometown Alaska. Hi, Kim.
Hi.
Go ahead and...
Hello, I have actually two questions. The first one is there any plan to formalize the Talented and Gifted program, especially at the middle school level, to affect some of those kids in a more positive way? And the second question I have is about the Middle Academy for high school. Why is that taking place on the Eagle River campus rather than in the actual Matsu?
Sure. On your first question, we are moving towards beefing up and adding value and more competency to the staff that teach our talented and gifted. Currently in the middle and high schools, as you had just referenced, a secondary school, there's additional staffing there, and we encourage the preparatory classes that students can then go into advanced placement or IB at Palmer High School. And in elementary school, it's more of an outreach of activities and initiatives to get kids. But we did just hire a new employee who has a background in talented and gifted to really bring that into a more structured program. Right now, each school offers an abundance of just initiatives or clubs or classes. But I think what we're missing is that overall structure of the school district of saying, if you want this, this is what we can do and we can guarantee it in our schools. So we are working on that, just hired a full-time talented and gifted coordinator at the Matsu. And the second one, if I can just say, Matsu College just wasn't ready. And we worked with, for the Matsu, the Alaska Middle College, which is going to be so exciting, offering kids junior and senior year.
Yeah, we definitely want to talk about
an ability
that, yeah.
to get an mm-hmm. associate's degree of arts, which really is transferable. UA hopes it's transferable other places to show that they are a rigorous university.
Right.
Our partnership with Matsu at the time, there was a new president, and he was, you know, geared towards it, and everything was going, but they just maybe had too much on their plate right now. And so when we went to UA as a system, Eagle River was proposed, and kids can get a ride on Peeper Mover, of course, with an ID, if you will.
Would
so,
it be the Wolf Card? Would they get a Wolf Card?
Yes, so okay. They are enrolled, so kind of mm-hmm. when in Rome, they are definitely a student. The idea behind it is that college readiness is huge across the nation, and are our high schools preparing kids for college? And so we want a partnership that says even kids who are way advanced, who are going to college anyway and they know it, it could be for them, and it could be for those kids who just aren't sure, am I really college material and I want to go, but I don't know, and maybe my family has never been, and so maybe I'm
first generation college student.
Yeah. So it's a really partnership for K-12 teachers, high school teachers really, but I reference public school, K-12 school. So it's our teachers working to prepare the children through learning, and then they have to take an AccuPlacer assessment, and we don't turn them over to the university until they are ready for just to go straight into the academics of university, no remedial classes. And so short answer is perhaps they weren't ready, but it's going to be fabulous.
Do you think in the future it might?
I believe so, because it is really the interest in this and the excitement by it and the kids. I just heard one of my colleagues say he was waiting in a grocery store, and there was a gal at the counter talking to someone else about, oh my gosh, I'm just waiting to see if I can get in. And I, you know, the idea that you can get 2 years of college out of the way and then still have the opportunity for the performance scholarship
right
here at home, and effectively get that assistance through our counselors to help. So it's really easing into college, but it's rigorous. It's not making UA a high school. It is taking the kids who have that motivation, who can learn and want to learn, to get that degree.
So Kim, thank you.
For that to come to the Valley, it seems to me having it in Eagle River with the drive, you know, if you're taking the bus, you've got, if you live in Palmer or even Talkeetna, you've got to get to Wasilla, and then you take the bus into to Eagle River to attend classes. That's again, we're on buses quite a bit in general out here, which you'd already alluded to, but it then prevents them from doing any of the other high school activities, because they are still in high school, about after-school sports or drama programs or that type of thing. Is there a plan to move that out closer so these kids can benefit from the high school experience as well as the college experience?
Are ready and willing to partner with Mat-Su when they're ready. And so that was our first choice, obviously. Like you said, it just makes more sense. It's in our backyard. But we're happy that the Eagle River campus is partnering with us. And as you know, college schedules are very different. They don't go 5 days a week, 1 hour a class, you know, the same schedule. And so our kids should have, the way the busing schedules go, if they're in band or some music classes, if they want to participate, we're going to make every effort to allow them, because they can leave earlier than usual, because as you know, college schedules, it's a UA schedule. It's not Mat-Su's K-12 schedule. So we're hoping that the kids can take advantage of both. And we want to move towards what this caller is talking about. But right now, we are thrilled to have a partnership to get this idea going, first one in the state, and to offer kids, again, another public school choice that will move them ahead.
All right. Thanks, Kim, for calling. And we're going to take a little break, but I'd just like to let Amber, she's been holding and waiting to talk to us. Hello, Amber. You're on Hometown Alaska.
Hi, how are you?
Fine. And can you just let us know what your thought is? And we're going to take a little break after that.
All right. I just wanted to give a thought. I had a question that arose after the last call. Is this UA compound, are children paying like a tuition as they would in college for this?
No, ma'am. This is college for free. This is a partnership with Mat-Su, and you would enroll in the Alaska Middle College. And so it essentially, at today's costs, is about $9,500 a year. And through our partnerships and the manner in which we're having fewer staff and located on their campus, we're able to save money to buy the credits for the kids. So it won't cost any more than their regular high school would have cost. We do charge for some courses in a high school, and so there wouldn't be any additional cost for Alaska Middle College High School than any other high school in Mat-Su.
Okay.
All righty. And my general question was, I wasn't able to catch if you were for the larger system of the No Child Left Behind Act or not. And a reason I'm against it is because it doesn't really allow for any deductive reasoning or inductive reasoning in children's learning. And as you're talking about children going on to college after that 3 year and that 5 year, as a student myself in UAA and graduating from an Anchorage school, majority of the classes are all preparatory classes because we're statistically farther behind than any other home college would be. We offer more under college level credits than there are available for college courses.
That is true, and you know, UA is an open enrollment, and so everybody's welcome, and so all different levels of learning are welcome, and sometimes it's going to take longer for kids to be ready. I am a proponent for learning and for all kids to be able to have that opportunity to learn. So there are parts of NCLB that I'm happy about, that we do are accountable for our actions as educators. We're accountable to the public. I know that there's just things that don't work about the law. One size doesn't fit all in this type of law, and it is actually harming some things that we could do for kids. But one of the things about United States, if anybody wants to say United States is behind this and that, I just recently read some information. This is kind of similar to what you said, is that of all the patents in the world that are applied every year, United States gets over 90% of them. Mm-hmm. And so it is that creativity and that spark that we need to continue in our schools, the arts and the music and the physical education and multitude of classes to keep that going. But
that sounds like newspeak.
Mm-hmm. But what do you want to say? I want kids to learn.
Education.
Yeah. They need to read. They need to write. They need to have general competencies. And we need to guarantee it.
Graduating with that as a state, I mean,
absolutely.
Is there any actions to take? Because as a state, I mean, we're not graduating at a level to go straight to a college course, and so that needs to be handled within the schools. Of mm-hmm. course, you're pro learning. I mean, morally, we should take responsibility as teachers to do so, not because of an act through the larger form of government. I was wondering if there's going to be any change to help the reading and writing, because our language is essential, right, to go off mm-hmm. in any direction.
Yeah, actually there has been over the last 5 years, and we could look at the high schools. Mat-Su high schools have improved. I mean, this year alone, just hugely, you know, on their assessments. When I began in Mat-Su, we just looked at reading in the primary grades, and we had to change what we did to ensure that kids are reading. And it really starts, somebody who's dropped out or not prepared in 12th grade, that doesn't start and happen in high school. That starts way back. 5 years ago, 52% of our kids, according to national standards, were reading on grade level. In Mat-Su, it's 78% now. We have done some changes and have ensured that those basic competencies for skills so that kids can move on and do those things and have those abilities. But you're absolutely, kids should be college, career, military ready, and it's our job to get it done.
So thanks, Amber. We're going to take a little break right now, but I just want to put our phone numbers out there so folks can call. Obviously, there's a lot of interest in this program and in your work, Dina. So the number is 550-8433 or 1-888-353-5752. We're just here talking about education with Dr. Dina Paramo, the superintendent of the Matanuska-Susitna Borough School District. And I'm Kathleen McCoy, and you're listening to Hometown Alaska.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska on KSKA Anchorage. If you missed part of today's program or would like to listen again to Hometown Alaska, the program repeats tonight at 7 on FM 91.1. Remember, tonight's rebroadcast is recorded and will not be taking phone calls. You can subscribe to free podcasts of Hometown Alaska on our website at alaskapublic.org. This is KSKA Anchorage.
Welcome back to Hometown Alaska. We've had lots of callers today about education, and in particular, education in the Matanuska-Susitna Valley, Matanuska-Susitna Borough School District. Dr. Dina Paramo is our guest today. She's the superintendent there, had a longtime career at the Mat-Su School District, but is currently the superintendent. And we were touching on some, we had callers really curious about that Alaska Middle College School. And so that's one of Matsu's initiatives this year, and I really want to make an opportunity for people to hear what your new initiatives are. I mean, that's news. We haven't really, you know, we've really dissected No Child Left Behind quite a bit, and so let's move on to what some of the initiatives are. And by the way, how did you name it that, Alaska Middle College School?
We tried some other names, Early College Alaska, but really it is true the same of a middle college. It is before you go to a four-year, technically after high school, and it's not really high school, it's in the middle. And so Alaska Middle College stuck, and we just moved on, and our board liked that name. There were some other names that we had, but they were close to other acronyms.
Now, so. Let me just break in and ask, APU has something where seniors in high school can go to start their college. Now, is this patterned after that or similar to it? But I read something, I thought that their first semester they spend gearing up, and then the second semester, they take college courses. Am I right about that?
You know what? I'm not exactly sure about that program. I've seen flyers about it, and many Matsu students participate. And it is on campus as well. And they do a lot of career and college readiness skills. Uh-huh. There's B classes similar to that in Alaska Middle College. What ours is, that's paid for by the student's family. That's
absolutely.
Not a school.
It's a private
school. That's what's
school.
Different.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And when I meant the first semester was preparatory classes, I meant the Alaska Middle College School. I thought I'd read that about that. I actually don't know if the other one is also.
Yeah. Well, we're taking kids who may or may not have the skills, like that last caller said. Some kids leave high school. And what's especially true is that kids usually don't take 4 years of math. 4 years of math is not required in our state. We would love kids to take 4 years of math. When I am only required by the state to take 2 years of math, our district requires three. I may finish up my junior year. By the time I hit college or take those assessments, I'm kind of rusty in my math. So part of this whole transition is to encourage kids to continue math. Mm-hmm. They call it the four square, you know, four social studies, four sciences, four math, and four English to be prepared. But there is a career readiness. Skills about are you ready to be a college student? Do you have the motivation? Are you do you take initiative? Are you self-aware? And so we want to be sure when the kids go into the classes, because they're not going to be identified as high school kids,
right.
Their performance and ability should be and will be of the other students in the class.
Yeah.
And so we just are going to do our checks and balances to be sure that we guarantee the college kids that are ready. And
right.
That's what that class
right.
is.
So that's one of your initiatives this year. Let's talk about some of the other things that you really want to introduce. Now, you're year two as a superintendent, it's what are you going to roll out?
Well, we have, I really believe in public education, and I believe in public school choice, and that we need to have options that resonate with families and kids, that motivates them, whether it's large comprehensive high schools, charter schools that have a specific mission. We have a Glacier View School that is a K-12 school. It's a wonderful school. And so
it's unusual to see that in a public.
Mm-hmm.
I know that what Polaris in the Anchorage School District is a K-12, right?
Yeah, it
but
is.
Is that the only one, I think? So,
yeah, I'm not sure. Anchorage, but it's interesting. And so it's just something different. Mm-hmm. And families resonate with different programs. And then we also have different choices within schools. But some of the new programs that we're going to roll out this year, they have been assisted. One of them is the Air Force Junior Reserve Officer Training Corps, or the Air Force JROTC. We currently have, and I know Anchorage, that's one thing that you said is how is Matsu and Anchorage alike. Anchorage has this program and is a strong standing in the military with this program in many of their schools.
Yeah.
We had just the one school with Army JROTC, and so we're rolling out the Air Force. It's been difficult to add. The National Defense Budget has not opened up ROTC or JROTC in any high school in the last couple years. So our state legislature supplied the funding to the startup monies to do this. And we did go through the audits and the evaluation by the federal government to be able to have JROTC. It's going to be at Wasilla High School. Our state is such a veteran state and a military state. We wanted to honor that and have our leadership classes through another option where kids can get tied in. And before we even had the final approval, there were already 80 kids that wanted to enroll the first day. And so that's a bonus. And again, they haven't opened up a new program like that anywhere in the United States because of the funding. They haven't funded it, but our legislatures saw that it was good and helped us assist
us. So it's at Wasilla High School.
That's 9 through 12. We mentioned STEM and science, technology, engineering, mathematics, and we have in the Houston area, we really want to focus on the health through STEM, and we have engineering as a large focus through our schools that run through the core area, which is the heart of Palmer and Wasilla. And again, it's what we like to know and what we try to do in Mat-Su is that if we have an opportunity in elementary school, we don't want to say, oh, we have this opportunity here and go learn. And then when you go to middle school, you forget all that. It doesn't move forward. And so all of our programs that we're offering, we want an alignment so that there's choice. I can continue in a STEM school, which would be Tila Middle School, or I can go to my home local middle school and I could take a STEM elective. And so we just want different choices because kids will be involved in sports. They will be involved in drama. We want them to be involved in other things and be well-rounded. But this is just another opportunity for kids who want to get that boost in those STEM initiatives. A really exciting one is what we're calling the cyber centers. We have Mat-Su iTech. And again, I truly believe that K-12's job is to prepare kids for what's thereafter, their jobs. You know, moving on as an adult, whether military, career, college, whatever they choose to do, that they need to be prepared. And I think the caller kind of honed in on that, like, they're not prepared.
They're not prepared.
We need to do a better job of that. So, and we're working on it. But we are a microcosm of our community, and our community is so diverse, and we're trying to prepare people in different ways because by choices and public school choices. And you had mentioned vouchers before, and my issue on that is that, you know what, we want them to spend them all in Mat-Su because we will, and we do provide an excellent education for kids. But the cyber centers are located in our five large high schools, and the idea came when more and more, and it's been in the news about these for-profit cyber schools, and, you know, they're really getting attacked by the federal government by taking money. But when we found out and we talked to some universities, I was at a program where a president of a university, he was just stunned because he said, you know, they started doing these online courses, and then they looked at the students who were in them. And when he looked, he said, you know, you think online was distance, that someone couldn't get there. But he said 50% of the kids in their online courses their freshman year were sitting in their dormitories. It's a choice of the manner in which they learn. And we don't want them to sit there all the time. There's really a blended model where it's face-to-face and then e-learning as well. But we know that we need to teach kids how to do this online thing and how to e-learn. When we went to our businesses and did some surveys and asked about online learning in our own community, 86% of the surveyors said they do some type of online learning, whether it's for OSHA training or college or an extra unit in their work to learn something, maybe another new profile on a computer that they had to learn. But e-learning's happening everywhere. And so if we're saying we need to prepare kids, we need to have it an opportunity. And
what do they say? You know, you can Google anything. Google a tutorial on whatever you need to know. And so it's
teaching
happening.
Kids how to do that. And the difference of these cyber centers is it used to be you can choose a cyber school or you can choose a comprehensive high school. What our cyber centers are centers where kids can go. They're kind of a social place. I can have a third period with AP calculus with this class or just algebra over here third period, and I need to have that teacher in front of me. But you know what? I want to take a Mandarin Chinese, or I want to take a different history course from either a teacher in our district who's teaching cyberly, if you will, or an outside source from a university. They can go and plug in for the hour, for that fourth period in their school, plug in, use their own device, work on the course, and then go back out and take another course right in their high school. So it's not an either or, it's an and.
It's kind of blended.
And it's, yes, it's absolutely, it's a blended model. And we want to start allowing kids to use the tools that they do. They like that kind of stuff. And really use it to our advantage and getting them taught and have them learn so that when they leave us, they're prepared.
Well, if you've just joined us, this is Dr. Dina Paramo. She's the superintendent of the Matanuska Susitna Borough School District. And we were just talking about cyber centers, but before the show, we were talking a little bit about, I was curious, you know, what does the school district have as a policy for iPads and iPhones and Androids and all the sort of gadgets and widgets that we all are used to. And I was surprised by the answer. So let's tell folks about that.
Well, just this past year, our board policy, we changed it. It used to, you know, when you couldn't handle all those phones and this and that and it drove teachers crazy, it was, no, absolutely not. Yeah. But you know what? Phones aren't just phones anymore. Phones are little mini computers. And we understand that, and same with iPads. We want the tools of education in our schools, and those schools that have provided tools such as computers, they know that they can't keep up with it. There's not enough money in the world to provide every child a computer, and with it's a nightmare for the, you know, fixing it, this and that, and whatever. So we provide some loaners, if you will. You know, we provide computers in our schools, but we also have a policy now that's called Bring Your Own Device. And students can bring their device. They log in, of course, through our server. We scramble their 3G, so they, and this is all for the e-learning, so to be sure that they're safe on the internet. But they can log into our wireless in mm-hmm. our schools. Our schools after this year, starting up, will be all wireless, all 45 of them.
Wow.
Every classroom.
Wow.
They can charge up. They can, teachers now can use those ideas as those devices, if you will, as a tool. There's still going to be problems. We understand, you know, texting or picture taking of a test or cheating. That's all part of it. But it's really this honor system. Once students lose that credibility, we went through the same process when the internet started to be available, where parents wanted their kids to be on or didn't. Of course, it's all through parent permission and behaviors of kids that, uh-huh. that use this. But I mentioned to you earlier that they've kind of noted it as we're the when we learned, we were just in case. We learned everything. You had to learn about everything because just in case you might need to know it. And kids these days, they talk to them about they are the just in time. Mm-hmm. That I gave the example that they leave their house to go to a movie and don't even know what movie they're seeing until they get in their car or their friend's looking at their phone to find out which movie and what movie times are mm-hmm. there.
Because that information is readily available mm-hmm. so quickly, and it's a skill that they actually have to have. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So we're excited about this, but they, this is the first year. As we move into it, we do have a policy on social media as well. Our social media that goes through our school district is approved by the principal and highly regulated. We do not want our teachers, if you will, just openly being friends with kids on their individual Facebook. We know that can lead to some no good sometimes. So
yeah.
we want to keep our teachers out of trouble and keep our kids safe and teachers safe. So the Facebooks that we do use, or any kind of social media goes through there, Facebook. But we also, within the classroom, have what's called Edmodo, which is a Facebook-like interface, social media that teachers use and can control. So outside sources can't come in. Mm-hmm. And many of them are using that type of education mm-hmm. with their kids to log their reports, get to know, communicate with them. And I have a secretary in my office, and she said that her son believes he's on Facebook, but he's really not. He's on this Edmodo with his teacher uh-huh. and can communicate that way. And so it's we're just using the tools out there yeah. to add value to our system and hold kids accountable and teachers accountable.
Yeah. Well, we just have, you know, 10 more minutes on our program, and I'm going to put the numbers out there just in case anyone has one more question for Dina, 550-8433 or 1-888-353-5752. And you can email us at hometown@alaskapublic.org. So, Dina, I getting ready for the program, I was sort of skimming through the headlines on what had happened in your district last year, and there were a couple of headlines. One of them was written by you. It was in the Frontiersman, and it was a zero-tolerance policy for bullying. And I just wondered, what prompted that? Were there things that made you think you had to come out? It was published in the Frontiersman, so in the local newspaper. Mm-hmm. What was that about?
We moved to a program using Safe and Civil Schools. Of any responsibility that we have as educators, it is to be sure that when parents let their babies come to us, whether on the bus or drop them off, that we ensure their safety. And knowing in public what happens and the crises that can occur and even some suicide due to bullying, we wanted to take a proactive approach. So there wasn't any an incident that prompted that. It was knowing that, you know, this is our job, and we know we need to educate kids, but safety of our children is first and foremost. And a lot of that comes under the nose of adults that we don't even know. So we've moved to a system of Safe and Civil Schools where everybody's on the same page about safety and creating rapport where kids know that they can report any problems. We definitely are moving towards this with staff development, creating systems where I'm safe on the playground, I'm safe in the hallway, I'm safe on the bus, and I'm safe in my classroom. Mm-hmm. I'm safe in places where there's teachers not looking over me. Because a lot of the times issues happen. I mean, kids, you know, they know when and where they're watched and when they're not.
Yeah, so basically generating a safe climate. We've got another caller and sure. Running out of time, so I just want to make sure that we can get her in. Talene from the Valley, you're on Hometown Alaska.
Hello, thank you for taking my call, and thanks for the program. I really appreciate it. I actually don't have a child in the district at this time, although my daughter went through the district, and I used to work for the district years ago. And one of the things that I noticed over the years is that, like everywhere, the Valley has lost many arts programs, and so I really appreciate what the superintendent said about children learning at different paces and things like that, but I have not heard much mention of the arts, and I have to say that it saddens me that we have money to put a military recruiting program in a school, but not a music program. Music and math go hand in hand, and so if we want to inspire children to be mathematic wizards, then maybe some music and some art should come back into it, and I'll take my answer off the air.
Thanks, Talene.
Well, actually, I'm happy to report that music is in every single one of our schools. That is a program that I personally believe in. Music and your libraries are really the hub of learning in your school and cause excitement. Sports will get parents in a gym. You'll get your community in. You'll see the same is true for music. Music brings people together in a community. And the most pride I would say that when I'm in social settings and some of our band or dance kids go to perform, that resonates with the people of the Valley. And so I do believe in the arts and those types of things. Art, we do have in middle and high schools, but that is something that is left to the gen ed teacher, general education teacher in the elementary school. And it's a goal. It's a goal to continue to have the creative side and the science side of learning combined because that's kids just thrive. They love it. Mm-hmm. And so in our high schools, we have electives, and we went to a seven-period day when we were short of staffing because we had that loss I had mentioned. My year I started with, 125 less teachers with more kids. And one of the things we did in the high school and some of the middle schools is move to a seven-period day so it didn't eliminate a course. Because if you have to, for graduation, you have to have your maths, you have to have this and spelled out, but your electives are kind of open. And we knew that knowing through NCLB and some of those tests that they had to take that those other courses might be cut. We went to a seven-period day to allow more time in the classroom with teachers to be able to hold on to our electives. So that was one of the moves we did to keep our offering sound, even though we were short of staff.
It's tough. It's really tough to get all that in. And it sounds like parents really value the arts, but maybe don't have the full perspective that an administrator has that they've got to get all these things in before graduation, and there's only so many hours of the day. Have you guys ever pondered a year-round school as a way of fitting more in?
You know, we have, and there's been committees that proposed calendars that were year-round, and they really haven't answered the community's needs. They weren't the solution, the end-all solution engender some of those other coursework. So we haven't moved in that direction, but through knowing what our community wants, our budgeting process is open, and they share, just as this caller, they don't want to lose those other assets that build excellent kids, and they're through the arts and music and things.
Wow. Well, we're just about out of time.
Okay.
I if you have one sentence, I think we're out of time.
All right.
I just want to thank you, Dina Parema, for coming all the way down to Anchorage to talk about the Matanuska Susitna Borough School District. Next Wednesday, our host will be Shelley Wade on Hometown Alaska. The following week, April 15th, I'll be back to talk about Alaskans and their tattoos. So send us your pictures to hometown@alaskapublic.org. Hometown Alaska is on the web at alaskapublic.org. You can join us on Facebook at Alaska Public. Pat Yak is the Vice President of Public Media. Kristen Spack is our web editor and audio engineer. Thanks for joining us today on Hometown Alaska. I'm Kathleen McCoy.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Telecommunications Incorporated, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the participants and do not reflect KSKA or its underwriters. Hometown Alaska's theme song, Lead Dog, is by Kevin Barnett from Eagle River. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies can be purchased by calling 550-8400. This is KSKA Anchorage.